in the 13th chapter of the of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is a very sweet description of Brahma's attempt to bewilder Krishna. He was confused, obviously, and it was quite natural in one sense, because on one hand he knew that Krishna was his master, the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, there he was, playing with his other friends, cowherd boys wandering in Vrindavan, and he wanted to test Krishna. Perhaps we'll speak on this during the week in Melbourne. He wanted to test Krishna, perhaps give him a little poke to see how he would react and what Krishna's powers were, because Brahma knew his own powers were quite formidable. He was the topmost person in the universe. So as a result of his attempt to see Krishna's powers, he was overwhelmed, he was shocked, he was bewildered. And he just got a little tiny glimpse of it. Just a glimpse from a distance, because what else can you get when you're examining the unlimited, the infinite? No matter what you see, it is just an insignificant part, because he's unlimited. So Brahma then offered some prayers. And we're going to be speaking about one of his prayers, and which was the eighth of the texts. But before that, we'll just get a very, very brief summary of the first seven preceding, the seven texts preceding that one. So in the first text, where he begins to speak, and he was so shocked when he saw Krishna's power, the little bit, the glimpse of Krishna's power that he got, he was so shocked that he was stunned. He couldn't move. And then when Krishna withdrew his yoga maya, so Brahma could no longer see the Vishnu forms that he was seeing, and he saw that he was seeing that were entering into Krishna's body. In other words, Vishnu was his expansion. And then he opened his eyes and he saw Vrindavan around him. And he saw this very beautiful little boy. Maybe 4 years old, 5 years old. But he had seen this time. He had seen that this little boy was not an ordinary little boy at all. He was unlimitedly powerful. So first, in the first text, he describes Krishna's, what he saw from Krishna when he looked at Krishna, and he saw he was so beautiful. His complexion was darkish, and his beautiful face was decorated by his curling locks of hair, and a peacock feather atop his head, and his garment was golden, tadit ambaraya. It was like lightning. Lightning is golden, effulgent. It's hard to compare it to anything else in this world other than molten gold. So, Srimati Radharani's complexion, tapta kanchana gaurangi, like molten gold. And if you've ever seen molten gold, it gives off an energy, an effulgence that's so appealing, and it's practically different from any other thing in this world. So he saw Krishna like this, Brahma, and he described him in this way, wearing his garment of molten gold and an ordinary, seemingly ordinary garland of vanamal, a garland of forest or flowers from the forest. And he was wearing earrings that would move when he But these earrings, they weren't made out of gold or diamonds, but they were made out of the gunja berries of Vrindavan. And there was Krishna with his smiling face and his lotus eyes and his very soft, tender, pinkish lotus feet. So he described Krishna in the first verse. This is what he saw. And there he was with a stick under his arm, the bugle, the morsel of food that he was carrying, kavala, in his left hand, and the flute in his hand or tucked into his belt, vaitra, vachana, bugle, venum, and the kavala in his hand. And he saw Krishna in this way. But he was not confused this time, thinking that Krishna was ordinary, even though on one level he didn't look ordinary, he looked extraordinarily beautiful, but he knew this boy was not an ordinary boy. So then in the second verse, he says that I can't estimate with all my intelligence, and he's most intelligent, the potency of your body, what your body is capable of doing and what it is not capable of doing. Although my mind is withdrawn from matter, I still can't understand the happiness you experience within yourself. Because how do you estimate with something finite, no matter how great one is? Our capacity is finite. How does one estimate the finite, the infinite with the finite? Like the frog in his well trying to calculate how much bigger the ocean was than his well. Is it 2 times bigger? Is it 4 times bigger? Is Krishna 2 times more intelligent than I am? No, he's really intelligent. You mean he's 3 times as intelligent? I can't imagine that anyone is like 10 times as intelligent as me or 10 times as beautiful, 10 times as well. No, you don't understand, my dear frog. The ocean is vast, unlimitedly vast, and your well is very, without insulting you, it is very small. You mean the ocean is 20 times bigger than my well? I'm sorry, you're not getting the point. You mean it's 50 times bigger? And he's really expanding his mind as far. You mean it's 70 times bigger? Okay. Why don't you go back to sleep, my dear frog, and then you'll understand something perhaps? So Brahma's saying like this, even though he is so powerful, there's no comparison. I can't estimate. You're inestimably more powerful. So then, after saying those are the first two verses, in the third verse, then this verse is was accepted by Mahaprabhu as very important. So if the Lord is unlimited, how are we going to know him? How we can know anything about him? Or we can say he's unlimited? You can't know anything about him because he's unlimited, because we're all frogs in that sense. So Brahma tells the path of understanding. Gane prayasam rupastarman. You stay where you are. Don't try to run all over the place. But you hear. Stine stitam shrutigatam sanovan manobhya. You just hear about Krishna from the Bhagavatam, from known sources in this way. And then, even though he is unlimited, you can conquer him by this path of hearing about him. So therefore, in the fourth verse, he says that this path of bhakti, with the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, is the best path. And if someone gives up that best path to engage in speculating, five times bigger than the world, he must be like this, and space must be curved, and there must be a black hole that everything enters into, and there must be singularities, that which is all of matter composed, and time must expand from that. Trying to understand something about the ultimate reality. If someone gives up bhakti to understand it, which is a descending path, and trying to understand reality by the speculative path, using one's own intelligence, his only gain, and Brahma compares it to, if you take wheat that's already been husked, the grains have already been taken out or winnowed out from and if you just try to, after the grains are already out of the wheat stalks, then you keep trying to beat it and beat it and beat it, and the only thing you get is your own labor, your own hard work. You don't get any result. No wheat comes from it, because why? There's no wheat there. It's already gone. So all you get out of your endeavor is your endeavor. That's it. So Brahma compares someone who gives up bhakti to take to the speculative path, just like the person who is trying to get grains out of a place where there are no grains, and always beating it and beating it and saying, this is such hard work, but I'm not getting anything. And it's true, you won't get anything. Then he says, in the past, many yogis of this world gave their endeavors to you. They worked for you. And through devotional service, they perfected their hearing and chanting. So they offered the fruits of their work to you. So he's putting them above the jnanis who get nothing. And by hearing and chanting about you and offering the fruits of their work to you, they came to understand you. And when they understood you, they could surrender to you. And by that surrender, paramgatim, they attained the supreme abode. And then, because he's basically criticizing the path of trying to understand Krishna through one's own limited intelligence. Non-devotees, however, so even a person who's working in this world can attain you through the process of detachment, detached offering of the fruits of his work and hearing and chanting to Krishna. But on the other hand, non-devotees can't realize you in your personal feature. They may perhaps realize you in your impersonal feature, but the only way they can do this, practically speaking, you have to empty your consciousness of everything. Now you can try that. We're not going to do it as an activity. You try to empty your consciousness of everything, and what will you have in your consciousness? All so many different things, whether it's monkeys or sweet rice or whatever, something must come into your consciousness. So the impersonalists who try this type of meditation, the only way that they can get their impersonal realization is if Krishna benedicts them with that anyway. So they have to do bhakti to get Krishna to give them just his impersonal realization. That's the sixth text. And then in the seventh text, I'll just read it. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But even if one has the capacity to do that amongst these learned men, who could possibly calculate the unlimited transcendental qualities that you possess, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities. So even if one may have a great number-crunching capacity in one's own brain, one will not be, and could count the number of atoms in existence, or the snow in the Himalayas, or the sand and all the beaches of the world, still one can't estimate the qualities that Krishna possesses, because his are unlimited, infinite. So Brahma has just said so many things that bhakti isn't. Bhakti is the process of attaining Krishna. And now in the 8th verse, he's going to describe what bhakti is and the essential practices, the essential practice of bhakti. Now we already know from the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, and having heard it many times in many Bhagavatam classes, that bhakti is sadhanam kirtanam, hearing, chanting about Krishna. This is called sarup siddha bhakti. These elements of bhakti that have inherently, they have potency. They have Krishna's potency within them. They are like abhinatam namanamana, the name of Krishna. Krishna the same. So one can actually realize Krishna to the full extent by chanting his holy name. So that's one of the sarup siddha items of bhakti. But he's going to describe some bhakti in a bit of a different way. And it's a way that's very practical. And it's, in one sense, this is the secret of attaining Krishna. And in another sense, it's exactly what we've been talking about. How to deal with the material world of being an eternal soul somewhat out of place in the material world. How to deal with that fact where there's what's the first one again? The first D?
Disappointment.
Oh, I wish I would have caught my bus. So now I'm going to be 10 minutes late. Oh, no. And the next one?
Difficulty.
Oh, no. When I get to, my boss is going to probably yell at me, and it's going to be, and I'll have to go and put my head down and say, I won't do it again. Then the third one? The stress. He might fire me. And then the fifth one, he may keep me in work. That's the greatest. No. There's a joke that they used to say that if you win second prize in this contest, you will get a week's vacation in Philadelphia. A week's vacation in Philadelphia. And if you get first prize, if you get second prize, you get a week's worth vacation. No? If you get second prize, you get 2 weeks worth. Oh, forget it. I can't remember how this joke works. Let me give me a moment and I'll figure it out. Get second prize. If you get first prize, it's too confusing. So anyway, as you were saying something about Krishna consciousness, now Brahma is going to describe how to attain Krishna. In the last line, Jivatiyo Mukti Pade Sudayava. And if you do this, you naturally attain Krishna. Completely naturally. But one thing is you have to stay awake. And to do that, we need some windows open a little bit. We need air to breathe for that. Krishna says he's the air, the prana, going in, coming in and out. Oh yes, now I remember. Second prize.
First prize.
No, second prize. You want the first, you just confused me again. Second prize.
You got it wrong again.
Thanks, dear. No, I forgot it again. I had it for a second.
First prize first. Then second prize is...
Okay, what is it again?
The first prize is a holiday day week in Philadelphia.
And second prize is you get 2 weeks in Philadelphia. Get it? It's pretty funny, huh? It's better when I tell it. But I never can remember it. So now This is the first prize, actually, and it's not how to get to Philadelphia, but it's how to get to Goloka Vrindavan. This is, we call this the mentality that gives birth to perfection. And this defines, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, this defines the process of bhakti, but from a different angle other than Shravanam Kirtan Vishnu Smarana. So, I'll say the words, and then you repeat the line after me. Tate Prabhu, you say it. Everyone. Okay, without looking, who memorized it? Who knows it though? Already. Say it.
Namaste.
So again, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says this text defines what bhakti is. So tate anukampam means compassion or mercy. Susamikshana, hoping for the compassion or the mercy of Krishna. When? Bhunjana, enduring, just accepting. And here's where it is, where it really defines what is difficult. Evatma, certainly atma, my kritam vipakam. What I'm suffering now, or the difficulties that I'm going through right now, this is eva atma kritam vipakam, this vipakam. These results, these adverse, miserable, fruitive results that I'm experiencing, this is atmakritam. This is the results of my doing, my activity. Sometimes we've caused someone pain in some way or another. This is the basic point. And due to the stringent, means very strict law of karma, because we've caused others pain, we have to suffer from that pain. The circumstance may be different, but the very pain that we have caused others, at some point in time, we will have to suffer from. This is the meaning of this. Now, this is very difficult for a conditioned soul to accept. But this is the path. There are no innocent victims, actually speaking. So there's two sides to that. One is, and this comes out also when Maharaj Prickett sees the cow and bull being beaten by Kali, and Maharaj Prickett is the protector of the cow and bull, and he pulls out the sword practically to chastise Kali, and he does this a little bit later, and he said, "Who has done this to you? Who has beaten you in this way? I will kill him. Or punish him." And the bull says that if I identify someone as the performer of the activity, who has done this, I will be guilty in the same way. I will be entangled. And in our commentaries, it explains something even heavier. That the cow, the bull, wasn't exactly correct. That ultimately, the hand behind the hand holding every stick is Krishna. And this is yeyatamam papadyante. Excuse me, this is samoham sabhabhuteshu. These are the laws of nature working ultimately under Krishna's control. Now this doesn't mean that when if someone something terrible happens to someone that someone isn't guilty in doing it, that someone hasn't involved himself in doing a horrible act and that person should be definitely punished. And it doesn't mean that that person's innocent in any way, nor does it mean that when something terrible happens to a person, we say, oh, it's Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. Because it takes such a, at the right time also, because we have to go through different stages of processing all the difficult things that happen to us in life. But at some point when the emotions are down and we can look at things on the deepest level, and to give you an example of how deep this level actually is, because if one adopts this consciousness, just by this consciousness alone, with seeing Krishna in it, as we'll hear later, one becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. One is alive in one's spiritual life. One will be seeing Krishna in everything that happens. Seeing Krishna's mercy in it, that he's kindly allowed this to happen in this way, and that within this most difficult situation, there is a jewel. But one has, it's not easy to do this, and you can't artificially do it, and you shouldn't try to artificially do it. But this is the ultimate reality of every situation in the material world. There is some sanctioning, and Krishna has lessened it. One time I was in a Chinese city called Wuxi, which is happens to be the animation capital of China, for making cartoons and things like that. And I came there to give class to the devotees there. No, not very many, maybe 15, 20, and they were almost all old ladies. And I thought, what am I going to do here? I want to talk philosophy or something like that. But then as soon as I said, how many of you have been to Vrindavan? They all raised their hands. They're all Chinese old ladies, and they started telling me about Vrindavan. And practically when they were speaking about Vrindavan, tears were coming to their eyes. Oh, I didn't want to leave. I just hope I can leave this world and die in Vrindavan. I just can't wait till I come back, and things like that. And the youngest of the old ladies, who was, she was 45 perhaps, she started talking about what her life was like, and she said that 10 years ago she had cancer. And I said, of course you react, I'm very sorry to hear that. We don't say, oh, Krishna's mercy, Mataji. He's so kind, isn't he? No, we don't. So I, knowing how to be a little bit polite, I said, oh. And she said, no, no, it was Krishna's mercy. Because I was so attached to so many things. That's what she told me. She found herself, as she progressed in her Krishna consciousness, that she was so attached to so many things that would be ripped away from her by time anyway. And what happens when you are attached to things that you're going to lose? You suffer so much. You're holding on to something, and the forces of nature, be it your karma or cruel death itself, are pulling it from you. And you can't, no matter how many arms you have, you can't hold on to them. So she thought that Krishna had been very, very kind to her to detach her from things on this level, and it was actually real with her. It was deep. She was deep. We can't pretend. But if we maintain all the wounds of life and not see Krishna's mercy in it, we can maintain them for 10 years and 20 years and 30 years and 40 years and the event is completely gone. 50 years, 60 years. And the event is long gone. So much gone. And we want to be able to deal with life as it is. And we can't because we're holding on. So this isn't meant to be a therapeutic class in that sense. But yet, Brahma says, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this is going to define bhakti. We endure vipakam, the adverse, difficult fruit of results, thinking that they're a reaction against things that have that I have done, and see, earnestly hope for Krishna's mercy within this. And then the rest of the verse, Ridvag Vipurvir, with the heart, with the words, and with one's body, Vidadana Namaste, offering obeisances to Krishna. Seeing somehow or another, on all different levels, not just with the words, because that's easy to do too. And not with just the body, because we can offer our obeisances to someone with our body, and oh, please accept my humble, and inside we're very, very angry at them. And we can say so many nice things, but inside remain, I'm very upset. But on all levels, the physical level, the words level, and also the heart level, the manas level, the mind level, if we could be seeing somehow or another that this is not undeserved, and Krishna's mercy is somewhere hidden in this, and let me take shelter on a very deep level of Krishna. If we can live our life like this, jiva tayo mukti pade sadayabak. Dayabak means that just as the son naturally inherits the property of the father, so just by being alive, and one translation of this is, as we'll hear, is that one immediately becomes eligible for the kingdom of God or liberation. If one can live in this way, just being alive in this consciousness, always respecting Krishna within the heart in this way, regardless of the good times or the bad times. My dear Lord, one who earnestly means sincerely, waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body. Such a person is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So, this is very, very easy to understand. And it is very, very difficult. Very, 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 very difficult to do. Because the mind refuses, it tends to refuse to accept that I have anything to do with this suffering, and it has anything to do with me. And here I am, the nicest person in existence, and something horrible has happened to me. How is that possible? There must be a virus in the program, or something like that. Now here's the BBT purport. And I'll read the whole thing. I'll have... You read this page? Yes?
Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word su-samikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind, a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, and therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produces the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight indication to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining a personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Daya Bhak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach a supreme pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purificatory process. Which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord.
What do you think? Huh? What did you say?
Intense.
Yes. Listen to the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. See, if one's relationship with Krishna isn't strong enough, in other words, trusting enough that he's actually there and he's actually in control and he's actually behind this, then it's impossible. And he's loving and he's compassionate, and the difficulties of the material world, no matter how difficult they are, painful they are, terrible as they are, destructive disasters as they are, they're temporary, and being with him is eternal. Unless one's faith is complete on that, it will not be possible to have this consciousness. Listen to what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Now the other processes have been rejected, and bhakti accepted as the process to attain Bhagavan. Now the process of bhakti is described. The devotee understands that the happiness and distress, this is for a devotee, that he experiences, because a devotee has no more karma. He has, on one level, he has his parabdha karma, which means the karma that is attached to his body. But just by chanting one name of Krishna, there's no more karma left. All the past karma is gone. So he has to go through what he's carrying his body and what's attached to his body. But he doesn't exactly get the karma from that. His past karma, what he gets is Krishna's administering like his karma, but in such a way that it's more like medicine. That's the vision of a devotee. So a devotee who performs bhakti and he's not under his karma. So the devotee understands that the happiness and distress that he experiences due to performing bhakti and committing aparadhas, offenses, so the suffering is on the mercy of the Lord due to his aparadhas, his offenses, and this is Krishna's hand is there. It is like the father that sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice, and sometimes he embraces and kisses him and sometimes beats him. The devotee thinks that this is the arrangement of the Lord working for his benefit. The Lord knows what is best for me, and I do not know. Karma and time have no effect on the devotee, so it is Krishna's personal arrangement. By his mercy, he sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. So then there's a quotation from Prithu Maharaj's prayers where the Prithu Maharaj says to the Lord, as the father does what is beneficial for the son, so you are engaged in my arrangements for my benefit. The person who spends his life offering respects with body, mind and words to the lotus feet of the Lord, like Prithu Maharaj, he does not accept the sufferings of austerities or other hardships. He becomes Dayabhak. He gets liberation from material bondage and he gets service to the Lord. As the inheritance from the father is the livelihood for the son, so the attainment of liberation and service to the Lord maintain the life of the devotee. And while living in this world, the devotee remains fixed on the path of bhakti. And Jiva Goswami takes one point, or I've taken out one point from Srila Jiva Goswami's comment. Because it says that Mukti Pade Sadaya Bhak, so you can translate Mukti Pade as you get liberation, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Mukti Pade means Krishna, he at whose feet Mukti stays, liberation stays at his feet. So this is the Ashraya Tattva, the 10th topic of the Bhagavatam, and Mukti is the 9th topic. So that's a little bit of an interesting point. So instead of getting liberation understood in this way, what it means, a devotee who lives in this way, he gets Krishna. You are the devotee's portion when the father divides his property amongst the brothers. He gets you. The devotee gets you when he lives in this way. The devotee receives you, Muktipada, the shelter of liberation at his share. Then what is liberation? Sridhar Swami says that without living, the devotee, like the proper claimant, cannot claim his liberation. If you're not alive, you can't make a claim for your inheritance. In this matter, material intelligence is forbidden. But even without speculating, we know that the living son inherits the property. In terms of this verse, the person on the path of bhakti receives the property since he is living. And that property is Krishna himself. So somehow or another, if we can hold tightly to Krishna, if He is all that's valuable to us, if Krishna is all that's valuable to us, and we see that the difficulties in our life and even the disasters in our life are a small price to pay, and they're not undeserved either, for attaining Krishna, His lotus feet. And if we can just hold on to Krishna's lotus feet despite everything else, jivatiyo muktipade sadayavak. This, in other words, is bhakti. To continuously, consistently, and only hold on to the lotus feet, taking shelter of His lotus feet, regardless of what our fate throws at us. And sometimes our fate can be quite gentle with us and give us gulab jamuns only. And we think, oh, Krishna's mercy. But if there's a bomb, why is this happening to me? But one has to be able to grasp both and hold on to Krishna in all circumstances. In all circumstances, seeing life, practically speaking, as a practice for death. Ante Narayana Smriti. This is the purpose of life. To remember Krishna, to hold tightly to Krishna with devotion when it's time to leave this world. And we see in life, and I watch this myself, so many things happen, and my mind that I don't like, that are either on the level of disappointment, difficulty, what's the third one?
Distress.
And disaster. And these things happen, and life is full of them, and I see my mind turns away from Krishna. And the last thing it wants to do is take shelter of Krishna. What it wants to do is get angry at this one and get angry at that one and push this one and do this and do that and do this and this. So what am I going to do when it's death? Is it stalking me? What am I going to do if my mind hasn't developed this very, very, very difficult habit? If it hasn't developed this most wonderful habit, but difficult habit, of in all circumstances turning to Krishna and holding tightly with full faith and devotion to His lotus feet, what am I going to do at that most difficult time? So life, therefore, from this point of view, is sadhana. It is practice. To get the sadhya. Priti sadhya bhavetsa sadhana nitya sadhya bhavasya pakattam riti sadhyatam. It is practice to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is what it means to be a devotee. That Krishna is everything for me. Let the world come, let the world go, let whatever happens, happen to me. But Krishna is everything. Now, I've written down, let's see if I put them in here. Yeah, 9 points to consider in this regard. Because, again, it's relatively easy to understand. But oh, it's difficult to put it into practice. It's difficult to even want to put it into practice. But this is bhakti. I have nothing but Krishna. And it's easy to see, however, how much mercy is required. So therefore, if you notice in the verse itself, the tatteyanu kampam, hoping for Krishna's mercy, but the giving of mercy is Krishna's part of the relationship. And what's on the devotee's part is this acceptance of reality as it is. This is what's happening. Let me figure out how I'm going to deal with it in such a way that I can move forward in what is truly valuable to me. So, just 9 points in this regard, and then we can discuss. These were just points I thought of relevant, that bravery is often required to meet one's fate. I say often because when the galabjaments come, you don't have to be brave, but when the rest of life comes, it's much easier to preach to others on this point than when it's happening to you. This I've seen too. That bravery, one has to be brave to meet one's fate. It's not easy. Because our dreams of what life is going to be like it meets the hard road of reality at different points of our life. And it's going to do that for everyone at some point at the time of death. But even before that, and I'm not emphasizing it so much at this point, but it's, in one sense, it's the most important point. Taking this as the standard of bhakti will make us humble, and making us humble brings us to the point where Krishna is more inclined to give us mercy. Our own humility. So the Krishna is giving mercy as his part in the relationship, and we leave his part to him, and our depending on Krishna and becoming humble is our part. But one has to be brave to meet one's fate in life. The process Lord Brahma prescribes requires pure consciousness, which comes from good association, stroke sadhana, and Krishna's kindness. One has to be very pure. In difficult times, having trusted, confidential devotee friends is extremely helpful. Because the point of this seminar is how to deal with difficult times. Without devotee friends, who we can open our hearts to, who are kind to us, very, extremely difficult. Remember the words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that call us to proper action. Forget the past that sleeps and ne'er the future dream at all. So the past, it's happened. It's asleep, it's gone. And the future, don't dream at all about it. Because it's not going to be as you're imagining and dreaming about. But act in times that are with thee, and progress shall thee shall call. So we have to act in the present, very contemporary. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Everyone talks about this, about acting in the now and the present. The acting, thinking about always the future is the mode of passion. Thinking about the past and lamenting the past is the mode of ignorance. But acting now, thinking of how to best act at the present, despite all the things that have happened to me. What can I do? What is the best possible action that I can do in the present that will bring me closer to Krishna? Progress, these shall call. We'll make progress by doing that. But can you do this? Can one do this if one is angry and blaming the universe? Etc. Very, you can't. If then the mode of passion and ignorance are there. Remember, only coming closer to Krishna is of true value. Why is that? It's because it's everything else is temporary. So somehow or another, at some cost or another, if we can attain the lotus feet of Krishna, we are very fortunate. Avoid thinking oneself an innocent victim of undeserved suffering. I find this very difficult. Like if you visit a prison, all the prisoners claiming themselves innocent, and you ask them, why are you here? The judge sent me. So that kind of mentality of the judge sent me here, I didn't do anything wrong. There I was, the perfect model citizen. Of course it does happen sometimes, but not in the material world it doesn't happen. That's not the mentality that allows a citizen to get out, a prisoner to get out. That's the sea is false. In English, they call a long-term prison a penitentiary. Do they do that in Australia? Penitentiary? Do they call them? Yes. Penitent means that it's what the very good concept of it was that you go to a place and you're isolated from society and you're penitent. You can think about what you've done and make a very deep internal change so that you don't do it again. That's what we're talking about. And that's what Brahma's saying. But very difficult, very difficult. Easy to understand, difficult to do. Act in harmony with your deepest values and desires. In other words, bring as much as we can. We bring our life and our thoughts, even in difficult times, in harmony with what we truly wish to achieve in life. And not react in ways that go directly opposite, that bring us in directions opposite to where we actually want to go. Search for the hidden treasure of Krishna's mercy. Now, in this regard, I'm going to ask you this same thing, but I sent around to some devotees some questions, four simple questions. First, have you found Krishna was with you and helped you in times of difficulty? Could you give an example? What did you find most helpful to think or do during difficult times? And fourth, there was a fourth one. Describe an experience where a greater benefit has been born of difficulty. So I'm going to give you these questions too, and if anyone wishes, I'll be very happy if they reply, and if you keep it anonymous if you like. So I have some answers from devotees on this, and some of them are extremely powerful, and from devotees who I personally know have gone through extreme difficulty. Have you found Krishna with you and helping you in life, especially during difficult times? Yes, he is constantly with me, and I always feel connected to him and protected. During difficult times, I sometimes find it difficult to meditate on him deeply, but I never feel abandoned and feel he is orchestrating the events I am experiencing. Another one. when my spiritual master left, I was so devastated, but I actually couldn't stop chanting Hare Krishna. I would wake up all the time during the night and immediately start crying, and I would chant. Actually, I wanted to commit suicide as the mental pain was so much to bear. I came to realize that it wasn't me chanting, but Krishna encouraging me. So I could see that the pain was my karma and that Krishna was helping me so much. He was very much with me. And now I have learned to chant in difficult times because I know Krishna is there. I just chant in my mind and I feel his presence. I clearly see it's my karma that I'm in this situation and that ultimately everything will be all right. When I was tired of living my karmic life, completely fed up, I got down on my hands and knees and really deeply prayed, "Please, God, help me. I need someone in my life, someone else in my life." 2 weeks later, I met the devotees. I found that in times of difficulties, especially during the earthquakes, Krishna has been helping me in his form of the holy names. When a difficult event like this happens, there is nothing else to take shelter of but the holy names. And in these moments, I realized how merciful Krishna is giving us his names and how fortunate we are that we have been given them. I just tried to hear the holy names in difficult times. And I try to understand that everything that happens is for my ultimate good and is Krishna's sweet will. And the question, have you found Krishna with you and helped you in times of difficulty? Give an example what you do in times of difficulty. And the answer was, have you helped you in times of difficulty? Give an example. And she just wrote, just now. I'm not sure what she meant exactly, but Krishna must have touched her. Listen to this one, very interesting one. Have you found Krishna with you and helped you in your life, especially during difficult times? Yes, certainly. However, in the greatest challenge of my life thus far, I didn't realize how Krishna was helping me until the ordeal was over. He wanted me to learn a simple yet profound principle. Service to the Vaishnavas is what Krishna desires above all else. Once I understood this, he immediately pulled me out of extreme suffering. It was almost instantaneous. Disappeared. What did you find most helpful to think or do during difficult times? Taking shelter of the holy names, taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's books, taking shelter of my God brothers, taking shelter of one particular verse. Tateno kampam susamichamano bhunjane vatmat vipava pakam vivad virakovya vidadana namaste jivatiyo samukti pade sadayavak. If it wasn't for the challenge I had to face and all the suffering that went along with that, I could never have come to the position of crying out to Krishna sincerely. And I know the person, and oh, extreme suffering. Because I did cry out to Krishna sincerely, I believe he heard my prayer and directly pulled me out of that position, at the same time allowing me to learn important lessons that I could not have learned otherwise. Has Krishna been present with you? Another one. Yes, Krishna is even more present in difficult times. Krishna has helped me by sending his devotees to me in difficult times. The most important example for this for me, when I was lying on the table awaiting an operation for a burst appendix, I had tried 3 times to convince the hospital staff not to take away my tulsi beads. I was alone without any devotees to help me. Then I realized that once they put me to sleep, they could take away my tulsi beads anyway, and I felt completely helpless. At that point, Srila Prabhupada reassured me that no matter how the operation turned out, he had already made an arrangement for me, and I didn't need to be afraid. That's what the person said. There's many more. So it's not quite as frightening. But we try our best. We try our best and let Krishna do the rest. We try our best, and tomorrow especially, today we've already discussed a few things, one thing specifically, but a few in general, ways to take shelter of Krishna in difficult times. Okay, any questions on this point? Any comments or questions? Yes, I knew you were going to raise your hand. Go ahead.
If you tell us that we cannot do this yet, because this is very elevated,
yes,
then what are we supposed to do in the meantime? Like, what are we doing in the meantime?
No, I didn't say we shouldn't do it.
No, we shouldn't do it, but we can't.
I didn't say we can't do it.
Not that you said that we shouldn't come, but that we're incapable of doing it.
No, I didn't quite mean that. But what I wanted to say that it's difficult to put this point into practice. That's what I meant to say. But we should really try our best. But if we come up against the obstacle of some doubt, some lack of faith, or our mind, we should still try our best, but know that it's not because we're the most terrible, we're useless, and we're not even worthy of being aspiring for devotees, but rather we should know that it's in an elevated position to constantly do this. It's so elevated that it makes you jivatiyosa muktipade sadayabak. It makes you qualified to be in the kingdom of God. So we should do this. But we should also know, we should try our best, and we should also know that Krishna is there, giving mercy and helping. Did that address what you wanted to say?
Yes, it did in one sense. But I think my question came from a different kind of an anxiety that I couldn't do it, although that's certainly a relevant important point. And perhaps your answer covered what I was thinking, but I was thinking it's like if you say to somebody, this is what a PhD student does, and we know we're going there, you know, we're on the course to there, so we're not dismissing that. But then is there something that we try to aspire for as steps?
Okay.
Very high there.
Yes, certainly. We try to advance. Advancing means increasing our faith, increasing our practice, our knowledge of Krishna, too. So tomorrow we speak about those, what we can do more if we're not. But in any case, we should keep our mind on this as being. perfect. But if we struggle, there are still things we can do to elevate us, but we should know that we should become humble if we're struggling. That's one of the things we should do. And also, when you have this final exams, and we could say that the final exam is death. And that's the one that really counts in one sense. So if you have an exam, and we do have exams every day, or assessments, we will call them, because that's a better term than tests. Assessments, when you're in school, they give you assessments, but the real purpose of assessment is so you can see how you're doing. So every day we have we have opportunities to assess our consciousness. So if I see that I'm not up to a standard that I actually should be on, or would prefer to be on, or then we should know that we have to increase something, our study, so to speak. So that will cover tomorrow. Tomorrow's a good question to balance that. It's hard to say it from all the different points at once.
But there are people on all levels. From down here, even I see my own life. Down here, it looks extremely daunting. You come up higher, it looks like it's a wonderful ideal. You come up higher, it looks like a natural reality. So I was curious to see on all levels what one should be looking for.
Yeah. And when one is on a higher level, say, it's... You feel you don't have any choice other than that, because where else are you going to turn? Where else is there substance? But one has to be experienced in the substantiality of Krishna's shelter. Like, say if you go out and distribute books, or you do some service for Krishna, and one of the basis is of this is that you're doing service. And to do any service steadily, regularly, is very difficult. Because there are some days where your mind just says, no, I don't want to do it. So steadiness, I saw this in Vrindavan. What you can go and make a big, in Vrindavan, what impresses people, you can go and do something, you can sit up in a tree and chant, you know, for 3 days straight and not sleep and not eat, and no one will be impressed. But if you do something day after day after day after day, some devotional service, day after day after day after day after day after day, then people start noticing, oh, this is real. This is sincere. So one of the background points of this is of service. Is of service. So I can't remember where I was going.
That means I could be looking at my...
So as you're doing service, you could see... So say if you're doing sankirtan, distributing books or something like that, or any service, that's what I wanted to say. But I was going to use the example of distributing books. So when you first go out and distribute books, or do any service, you do it by virtue of your own ability and your own talent. And you smile at everyone in a way, you're really clever, and you tell them some really cute things, and then at some point, what happens, you completely start failing at everything. And no one will take a book, using the example of the book distribution. And you try all your tricks, you use all your best lines, you use your best smile, you use your, hi there, how are you from here or out of town? Are you from this universe or another universe? Or whatever you happen to say. Whatever it is. And nothing works. And there you are. And you have to do something when you're there. So as a last resort, what do? You pray to Krishna. as a last resort, we pray to Krishna, oh Krishna, unless you help me, what hope do I have? So then, if Krishna so desires, someone, say for example, may take a book and say, wow, does that mean that Krishna's really there? Maybe he's actually there, it's not just some story or something like that. And this way our faith gradually grows. I remember that time in Hong Kong, I mean, I have a few experiences I could say for myself where actually, in my mind, I really did say this, hey, maybe it's all actually true. That time in Hong Kong where we had put down, we were just early 20s, and we had saved up like $250 or something like that, and we put it down as a down payment for an apartment that we were going to use as a temple, and we were living in a guest house up until that time. We were just kids, really, but you know, enthusiastic Hare Krishna kids trying to do something for Prabhupada, but it was risky. There we were, all alone, Mataji and I, and with nothing. There was no other devotees, no temple or anything like that, and Hong Kong is a very materialistic place. So the $250 we had, we put down as a down payment on an apartment that was going to be a temple, but it got tied up somehow or another, and we had neither the $250 nor the place to live. For 2 weeks, we had, I think, perhaps six Hong Kong dollars, which at that time was about $1.50, for 2 weeks. And I could tell you, it was a long time ago, so I can't directly remember the experience, but I was in no anxiety. It was the least anxiety about money I've ever been in my whole life, practically speaking, because I didn't have any money to be in anxiety about. Spending it wisely, or saving it, losing it. It was nothing. But during that time, it was like magic. And people would come and bring food to our door, vegetables, chickpeas from the temple, from the Hindu temple. People would come and pay the rent. People would do this. People would do that. And I started thinking, wait a second, this is not ordinary. And I actually thought, maybe it's actually all true. This is actually taking care. And then we were just kids trying to be devotees. And somehow or another, Krishna saw we were trying to do something in Prabhupada's service, and it was very obvious, and there was no way I had to accept it, that Krishna was actually taking care of us. And then the $250 came back, and the supply got cut off. I was back in anxiety. How am I going to protect my $250? It's actually true. And another time, this is not quite as dramatic, but it was also dramatic in one sense. At one time I had a motor scooter. And there was one purpose I had for this motor scooter. The one purpose was that I could, with this motor scooter, I could ride from Krishna Balaram Mandir to Giriraj Govardhan anytime I wanted. So one time I went to Giriraj Govardhan. I wasn't an experienced driver like all the Bombay boys who grew up on motor scooters. Did you have one? Well, you're not from Bombay. Did you have one? Yeah. When you see the kids driving around, they're like 8 years old or something. But so, with five people behind them pulling and talking on their mobile phone like this while they're driving. So I was driving back from Govardhan. And they have these huge, one of the things about Vrindavan, they have huge speed bumps. Not really that big, but. So I decided that I would go around it instead of going over it. But so I went around it, but as I was going around it, it was so close to the edge of the road, and the road was built up, and there was like an embankment, and on the other side, down in the part, was all bulbul bushes, also those sticker bushes that are so heavy. So as I started to go around it, because they're heavy, actually, you know, I'm not strong. So, and it started to tilt over. And I started saying, wait a sec. And everything seemed in my mind to slow down. Everything started slowing really slowly, and I was thinking, this is just like death. You know, I'm trying to go this way. You know, all the cures that I've tried in my past, when I'm a headache and an upset stomach, I did this and that, and the medicines work, but this time, at one point, it's not going to work. You know, you keep tilting over and you're going to die. And it's actually going to happen. So I started thinking like this in somewhat philosophical way as I was sort of tilting over as I started going around it. And then suddenly, it actually went over. And I fell into the sticker bushes, the bauble bushes. And if you know bauble bushes, they're pointed, especially in the winter, they're really pointed. And the motor scooter was on top of me. And I couldn't move at all, because if you move all the sharp barbs going, and the motor scooter was on top of me. Don't laugh too much. It wasn't that funny at the time. And then immediately, a tempo, those three-wheeler things that look like big cockroaches or something. A tempo full of Brijbazis immediately came by. And they're laughing and joking. And all the men got out and picked up the scooter, took me over, pulled me out, got on the tempo and rode away. This is Vrindavan, you know. It's such a magical place. But the whole world becomes a magical place if for someone who is this kind of a devotee. And I saw this in Prabhupada. He struggled like anything for so many years. And then suddenly when Krishna gave him success, boom, boom, boom. He had to work so hard to deal with it. You know, because it was expanding so quickly. But it was like magical what was happening. So for Prabhupada, the whole world was like that. It was Krishna's incredible reciprocation with him continuously. So what kind of anxiety is there for a person who has this kind of consciousness? When you have Krishna on your side, who's all-powerful and all-compassionate, what anxiety is there? You're in his hand. And if we're wondering, does Krishna only take care of, you know, the exalted souls like Prabhupada? I can say he took care of me. He's not exalted in any way. But even when when I first started chanting, I was just chanting. I was in the University of Buffalo in New York. Now, don't ask me what they teach at the University of Buffalo. How to go left, how to go right. But that's what it was called, the University of Buffalo. When people in India ask you what university, what the University of Buffalo. I said, really? I went to Vix Palani. What is the University of Buffalo? What is it? Moyesh. How do you say in Hindi? In Bengali, it's Moyesh.
Moyesh.
Moyesh. Same. So, what I had visited a friend, not devotees or anything, but I had just begun chanting practically. And in university, I had a camera, you know, a film camera, but it looked like a good camera. And I was walking to the bus stop to go back, and it was late at night. And there's a main street, and on the other side of the main street, I was on one side, and the other side of the main, the bus was on Main Street, and on the other side, there was a very, very bad neighborhood. Very bad neighborhood. Dangerous neighborhood. And somehow or another, as I was walking, I crossed the main street and ended up looking for the bus, but I was completely in the wrong neighborhood. And suddenly, as I was walking with my camera, this gang of young hoodlums approached me. And they were like teenagers or something, but there was a gang of them, and it was actually very dangerous. So I started chanting, Frank, Krishna, help me. So then, as it turned out, I won't tell you all the details, but as it turned out, some of them wanted to beat me up really badly. And the others thought I was a good guy, good person. So they wanted to, so they thought they should just let me go. So the two sides started arguing. Then they started fighting with each other. But I saw Krishna's hand in that very directly. Krishna, when other people may say, well, it could have been this, it could have been that. But when Krishna, he lets you know in his own little ways that when he puts his hand on your shoulder or something, and others may not know, but you see that Krishna's there with you. But how easily we forget. How easily we forget. So that's some of the other sides of this search for the hidden treasure of Krishna's mercy in every circumstance. And sometimes, as one of the devotees responded, it may not be so easy to find it until after the ordeal is over. Or at the time of death, when the motor scooter of your life is actually going to fall over into the bauble bushes of existence. And are we going to, if Krishna doesn't cure our disease, are we going to think that he's not there? Or are we going to keep trusting him and hold on to him? Regardless of what happens, this will take practice in life, and that's sadhana. And we can tell the story of Suchi Rani in that regard too, that this one devotee girl that we knew very well, we were all staying together in Perth, and she was going around, she had very, very heavy cancer and was tired to die, and she decided that she wanted to leave in Perth, and we were in Vrindavan at that time, and she wanted to go to Perth. And without going into the long, long, long story of it, Gopinath said, no, you're going to leave here in Vrindavan. It was completely against her. He took over. It was against her desire, her will, and everything. He said, you should leave in Vrindavan, because this is the spiritual world. And then she accepted it. But he had taken her all around the world, seeking cures just to bring her to Vrindavan because she was sincere. And she left in Vrindavan. And then when Jagtini Mataji was around her with Kalini and Palika, and just as she was leaving, and he was saying, chant, chant. And she said, I am. She was chanting Krishna's names in Vrindavan while she was leaving. And Ayanjal Prabhu had come up. He had been chanting there with Madhava Prabhu the days before she left, and Ayanjal, in his inimitable style, he said, when I heard that she was going to leave, that she wanted to leave Vrindavan, I said, why should I come and chant in front of such a nonsense person? And then when he heard that she was staying, he started coming and chanting in the evenings. And then 3 days after she passed away, we were all the devotees gathered together, and we were speaking about her. So I told the story of how she wanted to leave, and Jagtini Mataji had set up her altar with Gopinath on it, with lights and everything like that. And then I was telling the story of how she, how she wanted to leave. And then I said, but Gopinath tricked her. And then as soon as I said, Gopinath tricked her, the lights on Gopinath's altar flashed on and off. And then they stayed on all before that, and they stayed on all after that. So what a world! What, I mean, this is, it's, you know, if we live in the lap of Krishna, we're in the lap of Krishna. We're in, Prabhupada used that expression instead of, you know, we're in the hands of Krishna, but in the lap of Krishna. Because lap brings up the mood of mother. When in the lap of our mother, we actually said that about Vrindavan. What could go wrong? So this is these kind of stories are like the faith building side that give us some hope and trust and everything like that. But tomorrow we'll speak about some of the practical, some practical points, also some other practical points. But here's the very basic, important, essential principle that somehow we have to trust Krishna and see His mercy and see our own culpability and that I'm not undeserved. And trust Krishna's mercy. Okay. Why don't we take, according to our official clock up there, it's 20 after, let's take a 10-minute break and come back exactly at 5:30 for the next part of this class. Please be on time, please. Hare Krishna. But 10 minutes and maybe do some, since breathe some fresh air and do some nitai. And do some thinking and praying and chanting and be back on time.